Okay, good evening. This is Radar Active Magazine, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And tonight we are discussing the homeless issue again. It's a continuation of the topic we started last week, and we have Kathy Dean back here again from Uplift, and we have Brian Noland and myself as co-host. And Brian, if you want to start the question.
Yeah, good evening, Kansas City. I'm going to reintroduce real briefly Ms. Kathy Dean, who's the president of Uplift Organization Incorporated. Ms. Dean, can you tell us a little bit about Uplift Organization and what you do differently from some of the other service providers in the city?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Uplift is an all-volunteer, all-donation-run organization, and we basically take care of the people that no one else can reach. We are, like I said, all volunteers. I'm very proud of the fact that Uplift has no paid staff. So everybody that's on the truck and everybody that's there working is there because they care about the people. And that's our basic goal, is to make life a little better for all of the people who have nothing.
So tell me this. How many volunteers on a given night will you typically house?
Okay, we go out three times a week. We go Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday evenings. We have, of course, three drivers, and then we can take four volunteers on each truck. So 15 people three times a week, so 45 a week.
Okay. So for those of you who weren't able to tune in last time, you can hear the show last week that we hosted on the same topic on KKFI.org under the Radioactive Magazine program. On that show, we talked a lot about some of the statistics, some of the facts and figures. Now, what I enjoyed about or appreciate about your comments and perspectives is that your organization looks at this more from a subjective standpoint. You're not so much about the count. You're much more about here's a need, and we're going to be here to deliver on that.
That's right. When we pull up to a stop, anybody that comes to the back of our truck that needs food or any items that we have on the truck, we are happy to hand it to them. We don't ask questions. You can usually tell by looking at a person if they're homeless, but we don't judge, and we don't ask them why they're there. We just are there to help them.
Sure, but you do keep stock to a certain degree, and correct me if I'm wrong, of some of the specific needs. So for example, you'll go out one evening and talk to a male or female and say, they'll say, you know, we really need socks or we really need a sweater. And then within the next few days, you try to go back to that person mm-hmm. and provide that specific need. Is that correct?
That's correct. On Monday, we were out last night. And if somebody came to the truck and needed an item that we did not have on the truck, we write beside their name, and we do take their names, first name only. We write beside their name the item that we didn't have on the truck. And when we come back to the warehouse that night, we look for the item and we put it in a bag and tag it with their name and location. And now tomorrow night, when the truck goes out again, we will deliver that item.
You pride yourselves on being 100% volunteer driven. Also, individual donations. You're not getting grant funding for this, government funding. Where are the food donations coming from that you prepare, and where are the clothing donations coming from?
Just, we have people that drop clothes off all the time. We have churches that cook in their certified kitchens. We have a new church that just got on board with us, Heart of Life, and they have committed to 1,000 meals a month. So that's huge. And we prepare some of the food in the warehouse, and the items, we get monetary donations, so anything that isn't donated, I purchase the items that we need.
It's quite an operation, I have mm-hmm. to say it. And the last time I had volunteered with your organization was 2008, and at that point I got to see sort of start to finish what you all do in preparation for the evening. It's like a factory. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a smooth operation, and it's a fairly large facility, is that right? Mm-hmm.
It is. We have a warehouse at 15th and Prospect. We have our three big Sprinter trucks parked inside. We have all of our donations. We now, in the past year and a half, have a brand new certified kitchen, and we are up to code with the health department, and we're just very happy about our kitchen. It makes things a lot easier.
You provide help with food to more than just homeless people?
I don't really think that if you, it depends on how you, what you say a homeless person is. There are people that we fed last night that live in a building, but they have no utilities, and they have, I mean, it's just like an abandoned building. We feed people like that. I don't think we feed very many people that are just down on their luck, that have a running home.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't be quite as broad as what Harvesters does?
No.
Okay.
But if anybody comes to our truck, we would not refuse them food.
Interesting. So I want to get into a little bit the face of the homeless person that you serve. We talked in depth about some of the startling trends and statistics with homelessness in Kansas City last time. One of the things that surprised me was that homelessness is increasingly becoming a female-dominated, based on the statistics, a female-dominated problem, where oftentimes women represent over 50% of the homeless population, which makes me worry more and more about youth homelessness. So I'd like to see a little bit about your perspective on what's the male-to-female ratio. Maybe you don't keep those statistics, but are you seeing more women? Are you seeing more children? How is that looking in from your perspective?
I don't have a specific number on that, but just because I'm on the street and have been for the past 11 years, we serve more men than women. But in the last couple of years, the number of women has increased. And I think I said this last week, we very rarely see children. We may see a mom that has a child with her, and if we do at that time, we will give them food, but then we assist them in finding a place to stay, because if a woman has a child on the street, she may be working on the street, and that's not a safe place for a child.
Sure. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about safety broadly. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's more than just one person on one of your vans on a given night, although that probably isn't always the case. And so I wonder if you're going to certain parts of town where there's a camp or where there's effectively multiple people, how do you and your volunteers deal with safety?
Okay, safety is our utmost. With our volunteers, we put that first. But in the 11 years that I've been on this street, well, in the 25 years that Uplift has been going, we've never had an incident where a volunteer has ever been hurt. We have gotten into a situation myself. I got into a situation that one of the homeless people that was new that I did not know got angry and started toward me. And before I could even think, the other homeless people that do know me had taken care of the situation. My husband doesn't feel that I'm safe on the street, but I am probably the safest woman on the streets of Kansas City because I have so many people that they would fight to the death to protect me.
Sure. Now, without feeding into one of the common, I think, misperceptions or stereotypes about homeless people, my question regards drunkenness and alcohol with the homeless population in relation to your safety. I think, not to again paint with a broad brush one group of people who have many and diverse causes of their being on the street, but alcoholism is certainly not a stranger to the homeless population. So in its cold December, February evening and you're out, do you often find yourself in a situation where you have to call an ambulance because someone's so drunk that they're passed out in a pile of snow and ice? What's the situation like there?
That happens occasionally. I know I have had to call 911, and they're very good to come and help us if it's so cold out and somebody has passed out or we know can't walk. We will call and they come and help take care of them. It happens occasionally, but not an awful lot. I think the homeless people try to take care of each other. And that's one thing that I have noticed. They protect each other.
For lack of a better way of saying it, so dealing with that, following up on that myth, some of my kind of right-wing friends argue and present to me that they think of them as all being drunks and out with the bottle of wine, and that they are out there because they want to be. And that another myth is they think that if they're out there, it's because they won't go to a shelter.
I don't know that anybody's out there because they want to be out there, but there are a number of the people that we serve that can't go into a shelter. They fear for being in a group of people. One man told me that we asked a couple of weeks ago, we were doing an article for our newsletter, and the article was, "What does uplift mean to you?" And this one man surprised me with his answer. He said, "Uplift saved my life." And of course, I think, well, he's just saying that because I want to hear that. And I said, "Well, can you be more specific? How did we save your life?" And he said, "I was starving to death, and I tried to go in to the missions, and it's some of their policy that you sit through a service, and then you shower, and then you get your food." Well, he tried on many occasions to sit through the service, and he has severe PTSD, and he could never make it. Something would trigger, and he just would have a panic attack and just run into the street. And as he ran out of the door, he was running down the street, and he saw an uplift truck, and he read on the side, "Taking care and compassion to the homeless." So he followed us to our stop, and we gave him food. And he said that he can't go inside to eat, and if we didn't come to him, he would not be able to eat. I know there would be organizations that would say he needs mental help, and he does. But right now, and I think I used this last week, I don't want to repeat myself, but I'm going to say this again. If you think of society as a ladder, we're not even on the ladder. We're down in the muck and the mire, and we're holding their heads up just long enough to keep them alive so maybe one of the agencies can reach down and help them. It's not Uplift's mission to home the homeless, to house the homeless. It's our mission to keep them alive until somebody can.
So as a follow-up with that, how, if at all, do you deal with the issue, which I imagine is somewhat pervasive, of mental health needs within the homeless populations that you serve?
Well, it's a very hard question. I have a very high percentage of the people that probably do have mental illness, and that's why they're there. Some of the people, there's one woman that we take care of. She is the most amazing poet I have ever read. She has the most beautiful poetry, and she recites it to us when we pull up, and she's so proud of it. I've taken her to churches, and she's recited her poetry for the church services. And I had served her for 7-8 years, and then one day she said something that just triggered a red flag, and I thought, I didn't realize that she had a mental issue, sure. But she does. And her daughter, I've gotten to know her daughter.
Is her daughter also homeless?
No. Okay. Her daughter is a very successful, very talented, beautiful young woman.
So will Uplift ever provide, this might seem like a silly question, but I don't think it is, cigarettes or aspirin medications, anything like that?
We will not supply cigarettes because I personally don't want anybody to smoke, but no, we would not do that. But we do take over-the-counter medications, okay, like allergy, ibuprofen, acetaminophen, sure, stuff like that. But we give it in very small, like one day's dose that you could take in 24-hour period.
I'd like you to address an issue. We discussed it briefly last week, but if you're not working in any way to house the homeless, you're merely dealing with that existential need of food, of clothing, things like that, at the very basic level that you mentioned, are you, and this is a common criticism leveled against Uplift, enabling homelessness?
No. We work very hard not to enable. And if you were on the truck with me, not last winter, but the winter before, I remember specifically one night, it had, on Sunday night, it had gotten to 8 or 10 below zero, actual temperature. That was not wind chill. And I drove the next Monday, and the plastic bread wrappers that we were trying to transport, they were breaking. It was so cold. The high that day was 2 below zero. The people that we served that night, the number was large. The people that we served that night were not staying on the street because we were serving them a hot meal. We don't enable anybody to stay on the street. I've learned, too, when I always tell everybody on my truck, we're going to take a little bowl of really good food, but we're going to take a lot of love and compassion. And they take the food and they eat it, but they spend a lot of time telling me, like I'm their mom, this happened to me today, or somebody did this, or something. There's such a relationship there, but nobody would, as much as they love me, and they do, no one would stay under a bridge to be able to talk to me.
Sure. And what's the collaboration then? Are there ever these sort of dire moments in which you find, let's say, the rare woman with child who might need a shelter that evening? Do you have a means or some sort of connectivity to send them to that shelter, to that organization that might be able to assist them?
Well, we have numbers of places that will take families, like City Union Mission Family or Restart, any of the Kansas City Rescue Mission. And I can remember specifically one day last winter, somebody had been in City Union Mission. It was a woman, City Union Mission, for the maximum length of time. So she had to go out on the street. She did not have a tent. She didn't have anything. And so she called 211, and they in turn gave her my number, and she called me. And I came downtown, and I searched with her. She was not going to make it. She was going to freeze to death. She was not prepared to be out there. I searched with her, and we found, finally, after many phone calls, a place that could actually take her in. So we do work to get people in.
We're listening to Ms. Kathy Dean, president of Uplift Organization, talking about homelessness in Kansas City as a follow-up from our show last week. You mentioned the potential or the closeness to death that many of these homeless face. Have you personally, and I'm sorry to ask the personal question, but have you personally witnessed some of that yourself on your runs?
I have not seen a dead body, but we do have drivers in the past, more in our earlier years than now, that have come into the camps and found someone deceased.
And I want to paint a very clear picture for those listening this evening. In your fourth quarter 2014 newsletter, you said that quarter you had approximately 752 volunteers. That's astounding. Mm-hmm. For serving approximately over 2,200, I think was the number in that quarter. That's a depth that I don't think many people are aware of, not only of services that exist to deal with the need, but about the need itself. What other needs does Uplift have as far as connectivity with other organizations, the city, et cetera?
Well, that's one of my goals, and the board has come up with that is a goal for 2015, that we work closer with the other agencies and the city, and we're trying to do that because I don't think there's anybody that know the people the way that Uplift does. I mean, not myself, all of the drivers, we all have great relationships. We have one driver and his wife. Well, actually, he's the VP of outreach, and she's the VP of internal operations. And they pick up 30 homeless people every Sunday morning. She'll take 15 to her house. They shower. She feeds them breakfast. He takes 15 to their church. They shower and they feed them, and they get clean clothes. She does their laundry. There are so many people that give so much to make life better for the people that we serve.
So I'd like to, one of the common problems that the Kansas City Star has reported about in somewhat depth is homeless camps, how they're the scourge of neighborhood associations. People are tired of them. How often do you deal with or see these camps that, if you drive by many parts of the city, are clearly, plainly visible?
Well, it's our policy. We always have large trash bags on the truck. And if I pull up to a stop, and I have before pulled up to a stop, and I see that somebody has just dropped their trash on the street, we don't feed them until they clean it up. And I kind of use the rule that I would not allow my child to throw trash on the ground, and I'm not going to allow them to do it either. And the camps, it depends on the person. We have one homeless person that comes to my mind. I've gone into his camp many times. He isn't there. He had a little makeshift sleeping area. He had his blanket folded and tucked perfectly. And you could tell that he had found something and swept the dirt around his bed. And you go into other camps and it's horrible. They're good and they're bad in every walk of life.
You had talked about the volunteers and the 750. Is your organization able to get any, I don't know if you call them volunteers, but people who work for AmeriCorps assigned to your organization to help?
Good question.
We have worked, I believe, with the AmeriCorps. We, at this point right now, we are booked for people to get on the truck until April. We don't have an open seat on the truck until April.
And the other question I'm wondering is, when you come across some of these families and when they have children with them, are there certain things you do relating to those to help the children specifically?
Yes.
And do you ever contact the state agencies out of concern if you think the children need to be in the foster home?
Well, we, just being in the camp for the time that we are to feed, I myself have not really gotten personally involved with a mom and a child or a mom and dad and a child, because when we get off of the truck, we say to them, we will feed you, but it is not okay for you to be on the street. Can we have you go to City Union Mission Family or to one of the other agencies? And most cases, we don't see them again.
Now, this is not your area of expertise, so you certainly don't have to get into the muck on this one, but I try to track to a certain degree what, if anything, the city of Kansas City is doing about this issue. And I thought it was interesting. Last year, there was a failed attempt by the city council to pass what I thought was almost a narrowly tailored bill that would have put you out of business. I think the concern it arose from was that of course, the camps and neighborhoods, but the goal of that ordinance would have been that homeless service organizations would have had to apply for free permits and be required to prepare food in city-inspected kitchens. You mentioned, however, that your kitchen is certified city-inspected.
Well, since this started, we only became certified when this ordinance was being discussed. Okay. Because we want to be proactive. If we need to do whatever the rule the city says, we're going to try to do it, because we are not fighting against what they think is right, but we also know what we do. We've tried and trued everything we do, and we know how we need to do it.
It seemed bizarre, knowing Councilman Scott Wagner, who I believe was the proponent. I really do think his heart was in the right place. It was coming from a place of compassion. It was just so bizarre. You know, that of all of the possible ways we could address the issue of homelessness, we're going to make it more difficult for people to feed them. Now, again, just so everyone's aware, that did fail on a 6-6 vote, but I thought it was interesting. What, over the years, what other sort of similar attempts, if any, have you seen from the city that could have helped or hurt Uplift?
That was the first time that we've ever been in any situation like that.
Which is sad in itself,
I know.
By the way.
That was the first time that I know of anything. It certainly was the first time I was involved with it. And I know that it came from concerned citizens in the Northeast area, which Uplift has never served in that area. That's one. Kessler Park is a place that we've never gone into. So it was, I don't even know how to address that, except that it, we did follow the rules. We do have our drivers now, food manager certified, so that our volunteers can get on the truck. We get our food from certified kitchens. And whatever we need to do to make it better for the homeless, we will do that. But the part that I had the problem with is that we would brand every item. That's financially not possible. That would cost more than the money that we operate on in a year's time. So that was our issue with that.
What personally brought you into this mission?
Well, I worked in the corporate world most of my life, and one night, it was a very cold night, I was walking by the television, and I saw somebody handing some bowl steaming under a bridge, and I thought, oh, I want to do that. So I checked into it, and it was Uplift, and that's how I got started.
And you said it's 25 years.
25 I have years. Only been there 11, sure. But we are 25 years old this month.
You know, one population that we haven't talked about is the people who are in the jails and get released and they're homeless. I had one 2 winters ago. It was in January or February, and the judge was going to release him, a client of mine, and he's judge said, do you have somewhere to go? And the guy said, how cold is it outside? And it was February, and it was about 5 below 0. It was one of the coldest days that year, and he said, I'd rather stay here. So
we have a large number of people that have been released from prison or jail, and we do try to help them get back on their feet by feeding them until they can go where they need to be.
I'm curious, Craig, what was the outcome? Was he allowed to stay in
the
prison?
The judge let him stay in the jail until his sentencing hearing.
Okay.
He pled guilty, and then we had sentencing 4 weeks later. And of course, by the 4 weeks later, it was getting into the first week of March, so it had warmed up. So he was released at sentencing.
I'm interested to see, and that could be a point for follow-up, is how common that really is. Do you provide and prepare, as we're running near the end of our time here, but do you provide or prepare snack foods, non-perishables, to the homeless instead of just serving them hot meals so that during the day they have something else to go off of?
What we try to do, on Monday we take the hot meal, and along with that we give a sack lunch, like a can of beef stew, a container of fruit, so that they would have something other than our hot meal for the next day.
Okay. Last question probably is toilet paper. Do you provide that?
Yes.
Okay. And has that ever caused any sort of conflict or problems from the city?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. It's something that everybody needs, and we can only give it out one day a week because the demand is so great, and that's one thing that we don't have a lot of, but we've never had a problem with handing that out.
Okay. Do you have any kind of final thoughts or anything else that you want to share with the audience about Uplift before we head out here?
I guess I would just say, if you've never looked into the eye of a homeless person, try not to think that you know how they are or how they think or why they're there. They are human just like the rest of us. They may have made a bad choice, or the economic problems of the world may have caused them to be homeless, but they are human and they deserve our respect.
And I think one thing would be, even if you're not able to help them, just to at least say hello to them.
Exactly.
Makes them feel better.
You don't have to give them money, but you could smile at them.
Right.
And that's a lot better than making them feel less than what they already do.
All right. I want to thank you that we've been listening to Kathy Dean, Director of Uplift Organization. And you want to give your website real quick?
Uplift.org.
Okay.
www.uplift.org.
All right. next week, join us for Transit Talk with Janet Rogers. One of her two topics will be the downtown streetcar. And coming up now is Counterspin.